A lot of people think you're as dangerous as the Joker.
He's psychotic.
Some people say the same thing about you.
Yours.
Mine.
Theirs.
Yours.
Mine.
Theirs.
Yours.
Mine.
Theirs.
Yours.
Mine.
Mine.
Theirs. Yours.
There.
Yours.
Yours.
Mine.
Mine.
There.
Yours.
Mine.
Mine.
There.
Yours.
Mine.
Mine.
There.
Okay, you ready? All right. Shh. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, a movie podcast where we discuss a narrow subgenre of movies selected by us and you, the fans. This is JR. Or Roy. Am I Roy on this podcast? I'm Roy. I'm Roy now. It's a new podcast. It's a new life. This
Start
is Roy.
Over. You're Roy.
Yeah, in fact, Roy. Will you just do this whole intro? Because it's a new life.
All right. 안녕하세요. So yeah, here I am from Pyeongtaek, Korea, and I've got the usual suspects with me.
Hello. Hey, I'm John. I'm in Salt Lake, and I never change my name, not for Korea or nobody.
But occasionally spelled with an H. So
yeah, okay. So are we going to get into that?
But, yes, because as
you've known me, you've known me for 21 years, and when you know you're sending these group texts, and you have a son with my name.
21 years, John. I've known you for like 31 years.
Is it? Oh crap! It's 31.
Yeah,
years.
You're in your 40s, bro. Newsflash.
Gosh. 31 years. Okay. Yeah. We've known each other for 31 years. You've known your own son for like, I don't know, like 15 years.
15 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't be offended when I don't change, get rid of the H. You should be thrilled at when you see it without an H and you realize that I went to extra trouble.
You know, you just using the voice to text thing, that also bugs me, just knowing that you just do that.
You should also know that when I do leave it spelled with an H, I definitely pronounce the H. So I verbalized the John.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
that's fine.
Hey, we also have with us from also Salt Lake City. Go ahead.
Zoe, worst person Jahan knows, Lorenzo.
That's true. Ooh. That's true. This All is right. a good one. This is especially good to have Zoe here. You know, I mean, we've been doing the Star Trek thing for a long time, but it's good to have Zoe here because Zoe is a Batman freak.
Yeah. So this week, the genre was one movie character played by multiple actors. Much to my personal dismay, Batman was chosen, and then whatever. Okay, you guys picked Batman and Robin. I hope you're happy. We all watched it. But we're going to be talking about Michael Keaton's Batman, Batman Mask of the Phantasm, and then Batman and Robin.
And when Roy says you guys, he's not talking about me and Zoe. He's talking about you, the listener.
The listener.
Yeah.
I place blame fully on you, the listener. we don't have, you know, JR, you said fans earlier, but no, they are trolls. Like it's like, how can you say anybody listening and actually it's kind of funny. No one listening that were people who voted. We just kind of conducted this poll on Facebook. Like if you were to listen to us, which movie would you pick? And no one's listening.
No one's listening.
So they're like, oh, we may as well pick Batman and Robin, but it's good. We were just talking off air, kind of, about how, Zoe and I had never actually seen it all the way through. Like we'd both seen parts of it. And you'd only seen Batman and Robin once. And so
yeah, like 5 years ago.
Yeah, if nothing else, it just kind of got us to talk about a movie we hadn't seen yet, which I feel like in this grand experiment we don't do enough of.
Yeah. That's true.
It seems like 2/3 of our movies are movies we've already seen, which I like because I like those movies, but it's kind of nice to change it up. So that's good. So those are the three. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, so real quick, we should probably talk about big things that have happened in the movies. A movie has come out that everyone's talking about, and I finally saw it, and it is Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, that's the one you finally saw.
Yeah. Hey, it's so cool because on my computer, I'm able to get American Netflix, but on my PlayStation, I'm watching Korean Netflix.
Ooh.
And Blade Runner was on Korean Netflix.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
As well as Brooklyn 99. So it's like I've doubled my Netflix viewability.
Oh, my gosh.
That's good.
So
anyway, I love Blade Runner.
So we're really talking about Blade Runner. Oh, just like the way that. Oh no, the way that you texted, I was like, oh, or the way that you sent it out, I was like, oh, we're going to talk about Avengers: Infinity War.
Yeah, well, yeah, that too. That was a movie I guess people have seen. So
No one's talking about Blade Runner 2049, but go on.
No, it was wonderful. I loved how it didn't try to get all shiny and new. It felt a lot like the original Blade Runner, right? Like the feel was great.
I think, yeah. Okay, I do have some, okay, I don't know if this is a problem with Blade Runner 2049, but I think it's why it won't be as well, you know, 30 years from now, we're probably not going to be talking about Blade Runner 2049. And
it doesn't have Rutger Hauer. That's the biggest problem.
It doesn't have, but I mean, the first Blade Runner is really weird because you watch Blade Runner and it's just like, there's nothing to it. And I think that was kind of the criticism at the time, that there was really nothing to it. It was very straightforward. It's a guy looking for robots and the robots attack him. And
robots.
Then one of the robots.
What's a robot? What is a robot, John?
They're robots. They're robots.
Okay.
That are like
a robot. Okay.
Yeah. John, apparently you and I are the only two that say that.
Robots.
I get that all the time. Like, what robot? What the hell are you talking about? Sorry. Stop saying Batman. It's not Batman.
Zoe and I, in real life, we say things all the time to the point where I can't remember like how people say things. Like it's gone beyond funny. It's like no, yeah, the robot over there.
Because yeah. Well, you're saying this is just too straightforward. But finish your thought.
Well, okay, but that's kind of what made the original Blade Runner so. Like people thinking there's something about it. It's like they didn't say anything. And so people pulled all this random existential stuff about what it's about. And that's what got people talking because it wasn't overtly in it. And then the new Blade Runner is a lot more kind of
exploratory of those
exploratory
existential
and contemplative about these kind of things. And so mm-hmm. it is sort of more that exactly. On the surface. And so I don't know, the subtlety, the kind of deep thinking subtlety isn't there, even though it is really cool. And I love that bad girl robot in it.
Oh, and the music was so fantastic.
Oh, dude, the
music's great.
Oh, like, yeah. I hate music, but like the music in 2049 and obviously the original Blade Runner, I thought Denis Villeneuve did so perfect. Like he did a perfect homage as well as originality to not only the look of Blade Runner, but the feel of it. But kind of to John's point, I felt with why I was very meh on it. Yeah, I felt like it was trying too hard to exposit maybe some of the things it's more fun to talk with, you know, other fans of Blade Runner about, okay, well, what's the significance of this or what's the significance of this? And I felt like all of the set pieces were the most pretentious thing in the history of pretentiousness. Like the thing with original Blade Runner is everything felt like so organically, it was like so interesting. And, you know, it's Ridley Scott at his finest with set pieces and everything. And I think that's why Blade Runner and like Alien are so masterful at creating an atmosphere. And I thought the atmosphere in 2049 was great, but everything about where everything happened was like completely, oh, this feels like completely staged. It's cool looking, but nothing like this is ever going to look like this. This is completely staged. So for me, it was just kind of like, it was so distracting. Like this weird lair where Jared Leto is when he like cuts open the gal robot, and it's just like that. Well, what the hell room is this? There's like a Japanese pond with like walkway. Like what is this? So I don't know. For me, that was like very distracting.
Does it feel like the entire film takes place in a circuit city, a really fancy circuit city?
Fanciest of all circuit cities.
Only remaining non-bankrupt circuit city.
Yeah. Imagine an entire city made of circuits. But so watching Blade Runner, because we're going to be picking some categories at the end of this, I thought, oh man, I would really love to do the Skynet category and we could revisit Blade Runner. But anyway, that's to be determined.
I guess you can do that.
I'd love it. We should do that. Well, we should just do a one-off. We should do a bonus episode.
It's up to you guys. I'm not allowed to pick this time, right? Is that the way I understand the way things work?
Yeah, you're cut out. You're out.
All right. That's fine. I do Blade Runner 2049. It's pretty good. I'm going to watch it again someday with the sound off because I do just like looking at it. Even though, so I think you do have a point there that it doesn't feel like the scenery isn't sincere. I guess
it's like, yeah, everything looks like it takes place in a clean room almost, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the original Blade Runner was kind of dirty and
Chinese and rainy and dirty. It's great.
Yeah, it wasn't showing off as much, but it was showing off without realizing it almost. Yeah.
Like every location was the Tyrell Corporation, right?
Yeah.
The Tyrell Corporation's version of places. I don't know. Anyway, so should we talk Batman or what?
Well, okay. Did you not want to talk about Infinity War? Because I thought you were.
Yeah, okay, you thought that too. Okay,
we can, but I think everyone's probably like talked it to death.
Okay,
on
so you don't. I don't need to talk about it.
I don't need to talk
about it. Actually, you know what? No, I'll really say.
Yeah, I do have one thing. I have one thing.
I want to hear. Okay, so we each have one thing. Good.
Because I kind of didn't like it. Okay, this is okay. Everyone in the world has seen it three times by now, right? So I can just talk about the end.
Dude, it's made $1.6 billion.
Yeah.
It's made $1.6
billion. When a movie makes $1 billion, I can talk about the ending. Right? It's like, okay, if you haven't seen the ending, then someone else has seen it five times, so it all evens out. But like, all of the new people died, right? All of the old people lived.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, okay, there are no real – I don't believe – that actually happened. I know the first thing that's going to happen a year from now is something's going to happen. They just talked about, you know, how they have all these stones and they can do everything. And, you know, something magical is going to happen that's going to bring everybody back. And the people who didn't die are going to die next time. And it just seemed like if every single one of the new people didn't die, then maybe I wouldn't have thought that. But it was just so calculated who died and who didn't.
Yep.
Oh, but not everyone. You still have Rocket, so that's cool.
Rocket did. Yeah, right. John, I think you nailed it, by the way. I totally think that with the Soul Stone, with the sacrifice, and that's going to play a part in it to where, Captain America's dead.
Oh, and okay, here's the other thing I didn't like. Okay, two things about Avengers Infinity War. And it was pretty good. It was pretty good. But I had two big problems with it. The other is Thanos, you're going to have to sacrifice your daughter. And he's all crying and everything. And it's like, okay, come on. We all saw this coming. And if you're going to kill half of an entire universe, like, you don't deserve to be sad about one person. You're the villain, okay?
Why doesn't he just realize he's the villain?
And why doesn't she realize he's about to kill her? I mean, it's really obvious. Everybody knew that.
I kind of like that they set that up because it's one of those things where it's like he's willing to sacrifice half of everybody that's ever existed or whatever, or that's currently existing. Mm-hmm. But I like the one thing that means the most to him, he has to give up as well. So I actually thought that they set that up. Okay, that worked for me, and it was obvious, but it worked for me.
Yeah, but he says, right, he's the only one willing to make the hard choices, and this is supposed to be the hardest choice for him, right? So anyway, but so there's all that. Now, as far as all the deaths are concerned, I think if they bring everyone back that died, I'm going to be really disappointed. I think some deaths have to stick, and especially the deaths that didn't happen because of the finger snap. I think those deaths have to stick.
I think those deaths will stick, but I think 100% of the finger snaps are going
to
come back.
I hope not. Obviously, Spider-Man has to because he's got a movie. Doctor Strange has to because he's got a movie, right? There's a Guardians. Doctor Strange sequel
There's
coming.
Guardians 3.
There's a Guardians 3. Now, not all the Guardians have to come back. The other one is Black Panther, but it has been theorized that there could simply be a new Black Panther, and it would maybe be Shuri, right? Maybe the Black Panther doesn't necessarily have to come back. So I don't know, but I absolutely agree. There's no way Captain America and Iron Man don't die.
I think that with the mystical element of it, with the Illuminati element of it, I actually think Tony Stark is going to be alive because he's a part of that.
Well, maybe. So I've heard theorized that the good guys are going to have to get the Soul Stone themselves, and it could come down to Iron Man and Captain America, one of them sacrificing the other.
Oh, okay.
Get the Soul Stone. So anyway, because
they're both dead. A year from now we're going to be talking about this, but I feel I'm saying right now 100% of the snaps are going to come back. What do you give me if that's not the case?
I'll give you a big hug.
That's give me something I want, though.
Love's all I've got, John.
A pantsless hug.
We have okay. to slow dance for 5 minutes.
okay, but no hands on bums, okay?
So the thing I like, I actually really liked Infinity War, and
yeah, me
I actually think – I think for everything that it included, the Russo brothers showed like that they are some of the best directors, and I'm glad that they have – I'm glad that Feige and Marvel have like trusted these two guys with the telling of these stories, because they introduced Thanos. I felt like they gave Thanos good depth. Like, he wasn't just a straight villain, but it was something where it's like a completely perverted sense of like everything was like mutated and distorted in his mind, which obviously makes for a more interesting villain. And yeah, then the fact that you have the Avengers who are like larger than life, and the Guardians who are larger than life. Like, you're pulling all of them together in this movie, and they did it masterfully. So I actually like, kudos to them for making a movie that Joss Whedon couldn't do successfully with the Avengers. I feel like
the best parts of the Avengers are the parts where all the Avengers are hanging out, razzing each other, sort of fighting with each other, playing off each other's characters, because they're all very different characters, and it's a great dynamic, you know, whenever. Pretty much, I felt the same way as the Joss Whedon ones. When they're fighting someone else, such as Thanos, even though the Thanos fight was kind of interesting, because they almost got that glove off, or anybody else, I lost interest.
Okay.
So I kind of feel it was like a very similar situation. Now, what I would have liked, since, you know, the movie is really about Thanos, it would have been nice. And okay, this is like a total catch 22. I feel that what you said about Thanos, I don't think he was realized. I didn't dig him. I didn't believe him. It was a little too much CGI, and just a little too much. Like, I didn't get into his mind like so many other people are saying that they are. And maybe it's something wrong with me. Maybe I'm just not villainous enough to understand. But and so I kind of would have liked, maybe what if the whole movie was from his point of view and all the Avengers were periphery characters? But then again, that would be at the sacrifice of the best part of the movie, which is the Avengers just hanging out with each other.
So actually,
it's kind of a problem.
Before seeing the movie, I was kind of led to believe that this movie would be much more Thanos-centric, right? That it would be much more about him. But I like that he thinks he's so right. I like a villain, because the best villains think that they're the good guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah.
So that helps. So my least favorite criticism of this movie, and I read this in a review, and I just wanted to like punch this review in its face. So it was that like the premise was, I've never seen any of the other MCU movies before. And I go to this movie and I don't understand what's going on because the director didn't bother to do any exposition with the characters. Oh, can you imagine watching this film and having them have to do exposition again for all the characters? So this film isn't for idiot who hasn't bothered to see a single MCU film. This film is the reward for all of us who have watched every single film. And if you don't care about the other MCU movies, then just stay home, don't you big idiot.
I agree with you. But at the same time, okay, going back to your premise, I would love to see that movie where they tried to squeeze in all the exposition. Because I would love to see the weird forced conversations. Well, as you know, I've been in space for 3 years, and my name is this, and I'm a scientist who turns green.
But I would love to see the reaction of that person just like booing, like, why does Thor keep calling this raccoon a rabbit? Boo! Boo! Like, though, like, just not understanding any of the jokes or anything. I would love to see a person just be pissed off.
So I do want to say my favorite part of the whole film, and it's a really minor part, and it's really easy to miss if you're not paying attention. And it's not the fact that Tobias Fünke is in his never nude cutoffs.
Oh my gosh.
At the collector. But it's when the Guardians of the Galaxy are getting ready to go rescue Thor, right? They don't know it's Thor, but they like pull up. And it's wreckage, and I think Star-Lord says, okay, we don't know what we're getting into here, so everyone put on your scary face. And right behind him, you see Mantis. And Mantis puts on her scary face, and she's got her hands up in claws, and she sticks with it. through the whole scene. He keeps his spray paint on the whole scene.
And okay, so I didn't notice that. That's pretty great.
Yeah, I really dug it. I thought it was great. And the Guardians for me, they were so good. Like, they're so naturally good. They just feel so, like, congealed and perfect. Like, I love the Guardians. Like, Drax, like, they all work for me. I don't think Guardians 2 is really a great movie, but the Guardians in this movie were just – I'm glad that the Russo brothers worked with James Gunn to write their dialogue and help with that, because I feel like it definitely showed through on the big screen.
I'm glad that the Guardians finally got a movie that I somewhat found them tolerable in.
Oh,
you seriously didn't enjoy the original Guardians of the Galaxy?
You're the worst.
Second one was better.
What? Oh. I can't even. Okay. Batman Robin's. Batman 89's cool. Mask of Phantom's great. Podcast done.
Spoilers.
Like, so I didn't know if you guys noticed this. One last thing. And I was saying, maybe it's me just reading into something too much. But with the way that the Russo brothers are, like, the way that, like, there's a lot of pop culture references, did anyone else find it funny that freaking Dinkle, that Dinklage as the big dwarf in the what do you call it? The, what's that thing called,
forge
where they make stuff?
Thing?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Forge, in the forge, was yelling at Thor to hold the door. The only thing that was going through my mind was freaking Game of Thrones. I was laughing hysterically, and it was just me. Like, so, I was like, I guess maybe no one else gets it.
So it did kind of bother me, though, because having seen Game of Thrones, I think Dinklage basically told the director, so I'm just going to use my accent from Game of Thrones. That's okay, right?
Because
he just sounded exactly like his character from Game of Thrones.
I don't know. I prefer the in-jokes to stay in-universe. I don't like them to be like, okay, we're making a movie with this actor, so wink, wink, kind of thing. I don't know if I like that as much.
Okay.
All right. You guys ready to talk some serious Batman?
Yeah. Let's talk about a movie I have seen, because I haven't seen Infinity War yet. Okay, just kidding. Batman 89, that was the one that... Roy, you picked Batman 89, right?
Yeah. Okay, this movie's so important because before Batman 89, like superhero movies had kind of gone to the side, mm-hmm. right? Like, there hadn't been anything serious since the Supermans. So anyway, go ahead, John.
Oh, I'm Batman 89.
You're Batman 89.
Okay, I can't remember what we decided. Okay, so in Batman 89, it's like, okay, it opens up and the credits mention Prince, and I'm like, oh yeah, Prince is in this. Prince songs are in this. But we don't really... I mean, it's kind of cool because we don't really have to deal with the origin story. And I couldn't remember that when I watched it this time. Like, at the beginning of this time, it's like you see the couple and the little kid walking around Gotham. And I'm like, oh, does it start with the origin story? But no, they're just tourists, right? It's kind of a cool misdirect. And I probably didn't realize it when I was a kid. But whatever. But the point is, some muggings happen. Some petty crime happens. And all the petty criminals in Gotham are really scared because there's a vigilante beating the crap out of petty criminals. And they're hearing about it. Hey, you know what? Turns out it's this guy named Batman. So, but we get some players set up. Vicky Vale is the new reporter in town. There is a criminal element, a link to Axis Chemical. Jack Palance, he's in charge of the criminal element. He does not like...
And by that you mean Tango and Cash.
Ah, Tango and Cash. Oh, when are we going to watch that? Okay, but the point is, he doesn't like Jack Nicholson, also named Jack. A lot of Jacks. Yeah, what's up with that? Jack Nicholson is canoodling with Jerry Hall, who is, Jack Palance's girlfriend. Anyway, they're set up, and so Batman goes to the chemical factory. He fights with this Jack guy. A bunch of stuff happens. Yada, yada. We know what happens. Jack falls into some stuff, gets his face shot off. He has a permanent smile. He comes back as the Joker. The Joker comes back. He starts offing all the other criminals. Batman, who created him, it's up to him to stop him. In the meantime, Vicky Vale is finding some stuff out. And Bruce Wayne, played by Michael Keaton, he's kind of into her. And so he, of course, tells her that he's Batman, as he's wont to do. This movie's great because it's really this weird love triangle of this poor woman who gets involved with two psychopaths who dress up as different things and murder other people in town. And that's what the movie's about. And she's right. Like, I mean, can you imagine? I was thinking this just now. Like, wouldn't it be great if there was a movie from Vicky Vale's perspective and she's just dishing at lunch with her girlfriends and she's like, yeah, and that other guy I'm dating, it turns out he also dresses up as a freak and murders people in the night. I'm going to skip around. They play back and forth. The Joker starts murdering everybody. He starts taking over the town. He starts getting the town on his side. He threatens the town with his laughing gas. And he also entices the town with free money. And Batman stops him by stealing his balloons filled with laughing gas. And then he causes the Batwing to crash somehow. You guys have to talk to me about that. I'm very
somehow concerned. He uses the world's greatest gun. It's a pistol that has like a barrel that's
yeah.
like
it's like 9 feet long. Yeah.
So you assume right. the bullet is like a 4 foot long bullet.
But then he just contracts it. He just
yes,
like,
I know.
It like an antenna.
Yeah.
So like what was up with that? But okay, but the other thing is, I mean, what's up with the Batwing? Okay, here's my other thing about Batman that I just love. Say what you will about the Ben Affleck Batman, but you know when he was like holding a gun, people just freaked out about that. Just freaked out about that. Like Batman doesn't have a gun. He doesn't have a gun, and I'm like, what's his Batwing is covered in guns, and he's just mowing criminals down with machine guns.
Yeah.
You don't call that a gun? You don't call those guns? It's like if he attaches it to a vehicle, it's like permissible. But okay. But what's up with the Batwing's targeting system that targets the Joker, like his head, and the Joker just stands there and just lets the bullets fly by, and then he gets one lucky shot at the Batwing and destroys the Batwing.
Well, it's a big gun.
Zero stars for John, Batman.
I don't understand. I think you're missing the point that it's a big gun.
Okay, it is really big. Anyway, Batwing crashes. Joker kidnaps Vicky Vale.
And like Mr. Freeze says in Batman and Robin, It really is the size of the gun that matters.
That's a kind of a decent line from Mr. Perfect. Freeze. We're going to get to that. Oh, I can't wait to get to the Mr. Freeze lines. Oh, my gosh. Okay. But anyway, there's this big Vertigo-inspired scene at the end where they climb up the tower. They have a fight. Joker gets away. And Batman uses his grappling... A lot of grappling in this movie. I should have counted. pretty much the big tool that Batman uses is the grapple gun, and it really sets stuff up. That's like, it's like, okay, he has all these really cool Batman instruments, but 99% of them are grappling guns. but he grapples the Joker. The Joker like gets hooked to a gargoyle. Joker falls to his death. Everyone's happy. And that's how it ends. And I kind of wondered, did his goons just like fly off in the helicopter? Like, oh, let's get out of here. I guess we just killed the Joker because his goons killed the Joker.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. And one more thing I have to talk about. Well, I don't have to talk about. I was going to mention the thing is we have to acknowledge at the end of this movie that Vicky Vale knows who Batman is. Oh, actually, I do have a question. There are several things that I'm not sure of in this movie. So I'm just okay, I finished talking about the movie. So I'm just going to ask you guys these questions.
Okay.
For what reason when Vicky Vale approaches Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne at the party at the beginning, she's like, "Which one of these guys is Bruce Wayne?" And Michael Keaton says, "I don't know. I'm not sure."
I think he's being the richest and most famous guy in town. I think he's kind of surprised that there's someone who doesn't know him, and so I don't know that
is
I don't know
his
John.
Version of humility maybe. It's like I'm just going to pretend I don't know who I am. Yeah. That's something that's always kind of been weird to me. Okay, and then there's a point where Vicky Vale doesn't know he's Batman until Alfred invites her over and takes her into the Batcave, right?
Yes.
But before that, she was taking pictures with her camera, and she was taking pictures of the goons unmasking Batman when he's knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
So did she not know then? Because, I mean, does she not know until she – because when you have a – I mean, she has the telephoto lens on the camera. So I don't, but maybe I don't know how lenses work like that. Is it just the lens but not the viewfinder, so she couldn't tell?
I don't know. So it, so I would say that, I mean, they didn't completely remove the mask, right? They started to lift it, so maybe she didn't have a good angle. But also, John, I recently took a bunch of pictures at the Avenger red carpet where I thought I got nothing. But when I went back and reviewed, I got a picture of Benedict Cumberbatch waving out of his car. So maybe if she'd had a chance to develop the film, she could have seen something. But he totally stole the film from her bra. So,
right. Well, so it was just an excuse to kind of like second base kind of situation.
Yeah,
like they all knew what was going on, but it was just kind of like
he just assumed that she would stick it in her bra. He's like, well, this is most likely play, so going in.
Or was it like, okay, you do have something that I want. He's like, oh, hey, film. Oh yeah, this is what I need. Sorry, it was the film. It was the film. Don't press charges. Okay, when Joker comes to Vicki Vale's house, and he's like, that was actually my favorite scene when Joker comes in. But then Michael Keaton, he's not Batman; he's just Bruce Wayne. And so, like, what was his plan there? He was just gonna just tell the story and then just freak out with the fire poker.
Yeah,
he was gonna like win with the fire poker, right? I don't know.
I guess he just knew that Joker was just going to shoot him, and so he put the famous Vicki Vale heirloom platter in his jacket.
Yeah, shoot him in the, I mean, like, in that very small area, right, covered by the platter. I don't know. What if the Joker decided to shoot him in the face? Every time the people are in those situations, all I can think is, what if they wanted to shoot you in the face?
I know, yeah.
Oh,
I,
from what, Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah, well, Dumber Dumber pointed out something that, yeah, it's like very, it's like a vest is not always going to save you. It always seems to save people in the movie. Yeah, I would love to see someone like in a movie's like, okay, maybe they don't get shot in the face, but like a machine gun just removes their legs. Their legs are just like, why didn't I vest my legs? Okay. Anyway, that's what I thought about Batman. Pretty good movie. I like it. We'll talk more about it in awards, but pretty iconic. By the way, if you follow me on Letterboxd, I said I posited this question: is Batman 89 possibly the most influential comic book movie ever made?
That's what I was just gonna say. That's a great question, because I mean you're taking a genre that was really only televised, like it was on television, you know, the Superman, and then, you know, you had the Superman movies, but Batman is such a, yeah, and Batman is such a interesting character, because he's such a, there's like such like a darkness, and like Madbeard said, I am obviously like a huge Batman fan, so I've read a ton of the different graphic novels and stuff, so with him, he's like such a flawed character, and there's so much flaw to his kind of notion of like vigilante justice, right? And I feel like Tim Burton taking this project on, and the way that he kind of did everything, absolutely, like it was so, it was finally like, okay, even the most difficult of characters like Batman, who's maybe not so mainstream, you know, we'd seen him as a goofy guy in Batman 66 and goofy, like a goofy rogue gallery. But like Tim Burton taking on this project, showing like, no, actually you can explore some of the darker elements of these characters and you're going to make a crap load of money doing it. I absolutely, it changed kind of the landscape of, you know, of especially superhero movies, but well, I mean, movies in general.
Yeah. I think I could be wrong about this, but I don't think Tim Burton is like a big Batman fan. I think he was just like, okay, here's this property. It's not something I'm necessarily close to. But here are the elements of it that I appreciate in myself. And so, he was able to kind of change the direction that way.
Well, and he famously rewrote the backstory for the Joker, right? Which a lot of people were upset about, right?
Yep. Right. Okay, did you guys read about this? Actually, really quick, the backstory of Joker is that Joker actually killed his parents. One of the fan theories about this is that Batman is kind of, he's mentally ill enough that that's just what he does every time he faces a criminal, is he reimagines that sequence with the criminal he's facing is the person who killed his parents. And that's what he does every single time.
Oh, so am I wrong? Was the Joker originally a man named Jack Napier? I think
that fan theory came about just because Joker didn't kill his parents. And so some people like use that as a, so it's totally not true, but I kind of like that interpretation.
No, it's an interesting interpretation. And for someone like a writer like Grant Morrison, who explores more of the kind of psychological storylines of Batman, that would be really interesting. I think Tim Burton does a good job with that, but no. So yeah, kind of Joker's backstory is, it's kind of an obscure backstory, especially now. Like it's something that there's kind of a mystique behind it intentionally. But you know, the guy that killed Bruce Wayne's parents is a low life thug named Joe Cool.
Oh, okay.
That's the guy that actually killed. Yeah, he actually killed Batman's parents. So
yeah.
You're telling, it's a movie, and that's the thing. Like some of these fans, because I'm a really diehard Batman fan, but it's like it's hard to kind of separate literature and comics and that kind of thing from the movie, where it's like, dude, we're trying to tell a story in a movie. It doesn't necessarily have to fit all of the, you know, guidelines for what you're used to reading, right? Yeah. But like Tim Burton, like Warner Brothers, you know, you're taking a guy who didn't have a ton of experience at that point. I mean, he had made Beetlejuice, and they're essentially like, based off of Beetlejuice and what you did, we want you to do this. And it seemed like a pretty big gamble for Warner Brothers, especially with
Michael Keaton.
The cast they have. I mean, Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson were their two bigger actors in the 80s at that point. Like, Jack Nicholson was, you know, if he didn't have his Hollywood star by that point, I'd be shocked. Like he's Jack Nicholson, and Michael Keaton was the hottest thing. So for him to be able to take, he was Mr. Mom. He was it the All Stars? Is that what they're called? That movie where the mental patient movie?
Dream Team.
All Stars. Yeah, I totally get it. I'm the worst. But like for Tim Burton to get all of these players and to tell this kind of story with all of these stage set pieces, like that's what I love. Like, and you see in the very first scene of Batman, when we see Batman, like it is such an incredible stage scene that they have built. And then there's the matte paintings in the background. Like all of that is this huge spectacle. And I think any other director maybe not have turned out like this. So huge gamble. And I think a huge win that, to your point, John, I think kind of helped shape the landscape of film post 89.
So absolutely, right? Because so we said that, like, basically the superhero or the comic book movie was dead up until this point. And then it just exploded again. And it's cool that
and
Tim Burton decides
into darkness.
Into darkness. It's fascinating that Tim Burton says, okay, I'm going to do a Batman movie and we're doing the Joker, right? Because the Joker is the biggest villain of all. So I don't know if he didn't anticipate sequels, if he said, this is it, we're doing it and we're moving on. But he goes with the biggest villain right out the bat. And the Joker's a great villain because he's a psycho, and Batman is at least mentally unstable, right? And so like you've got the real big gamble with Tim Burton choosing Michael Keaton, because Michael Keaton's what, like 5'2"? I don't know. He's not as big as Kevin Conroy, and his chin is clearly square, right? So, I mean, Kevin Conroy is basically Paul Bunyan. But but Michael Keaton is extraordinary as Batman, and he's even better as Bruce Wayne. You have the moment in this movie where Batman introduces himself, and all he says is, "I'm Batman." But every single Batman movie that has come since does an homage to that line, because it's the best.
Yeah. You know what I just realized? When you decided, okay, we're going to do Batman movies, maybe we should have decided we're doing Joker movies. Because then we could have definitely done this one, of course, and we still could have done Mask of the Phantasm. And then it was like, okay, then we could do either Dark Knight or Batman 66. Or I guess, which one is the Joker in? Is he? Oh, he's in Suicide Squad, huh?
Well, he's in Suicide Squad, and then you have like the Killing Joke, that animated movie that came out. So two animated movies. There's a couple of really good anime movies.
I never saw Killing Joke. I was not. I read the comic like 10 years ago. I was not a big fan of the comic.
It's dark. Well, it is super dark.
It's pretty dark, but also I just didn't. I was kind of like, this is it. It seemed like it could have had a little bit more detail to it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's like only, and maybe intentionally, a gaze into the complete madness of the Joker. And that's its like singular purpose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it feels like of all the Joker movies, right? I think the best like of explaining who the Joker is probably got to be the Dark Knight, because
Dark Knight.
I think we play around with the Joker as kind of this funny character and whatever. And in the movie we just saw, Batman 89, I mean, he is a psycho, but he's like a funny psycho, right? And
yeah,
he has his moments where you're like, whoa. But in the Dark Knight, the guy is a complete psychopath, and all he wants to do is hurt people. And so it's just, that is the best portrayal of the Joker is probably from that film. But Jack Nicholson's Joker is extraordinary.
I love it. I just love it.
And what I love is you can tell throughout the whole film that Jack Nicholson is having the time of his life, right? Yeah. So anyway.
The museum, like the museum scene is the perfect example of that.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, this is a movie. It was a movie.
It was a movie. I don't know if all of these are.
So my biggest complaint about this movie is I hate Kim Basinger. I hate her. I hated her in this film. I thought she was terrible in this film. What a terrible choice, because I think she's already like 70 years old in this film.
Well, I'm just pissed that she weighs more than 108 pounds. I'm just like, so she said she weighed 108 pounds.
What a filthy liar.
He has a mechanism that only carries 108 pounds.
Yeah, it's like, so it's almost akin to me for like when I watch Superman again, and what's the actress's name? Is it Margot Kidd?
She died today. Oh, she literally died today.
Yeah. In all due respect, that was a terrible choice for Lois Lane.
What?
I hated Margot Kidd in Superman. I hate her.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love that she died today. And we're just like, yeah. Screw you, Kidder.
I am refraining. Normally, I would voice my opinion, but I won't.
You know who she looks like?
But normally, I would say she's great.
You know who would have made Lois Lane for that original movie would have been the same girl who played Marion Ravenwood in Raiders of the Lost Ark. That would have been a better Lois.
I think Brooke Adams from Invasion of the Body Snatchers would be great. I get all three of these mixed up. Or maybe Talia Shire. Talia Shire.
No. Who's Margot Kidder from day one? I remember the first time I saw like Superman as an adult, I was like, oh my gosh, she looks exactly like Evil Lyn in Masters of the Universe.
So my problem is I don't mean to get superficial here, but I don't see the attraction because she's just not attractive at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
So sorry. And you're dead. You're dead now, so sorry that I'm saying all these things. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm telling Christopher Reeve. Oh wait, he's dead too.
Never mind. Yeah.
Oh. Tell his wife, Linda.
Who's Evil Lyn? Who's Evil Lyn? Who was that? What was her name?
Yeah, she was the main bad girl in
Well, no. Who was the actress? Was that Meg Foster?
I don't want to disappoint you, but it was a cartoon.
No. In the Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, in Dolph Lundgren. Oh,
how did you not know we were talking? Oh, my gosh.
Roy, I thought we were talking the cartoon.
No, of course not. That's why. Oh, my gosh. Embarrassing. I'm sorry. Podcast listeners.
We haven't switched over to Mask of the Phantasm just yet. We're not in cartoon mode.
Okay, Masters of the Universe. Let's see who played Evil Lyn.
Meg Foster. I want to say Meg Foster.
I think you're right.
Is that Ben Foster's mom named Meg?
They have the same jaw.
Yeah.
Whatever.
She died today too. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. You guys ready to talk Mask of the Phantasm?
Let's do it. I'm so glad.
Meg Foster's in They Live. Nice.
Yes, she is.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the movie that I've never watched before, right? And people love this movie. A lot of people claim this is the best of the Batman movies, right?
Yep.
So I watched it for the first time, okay? And so I'll give you the plot with some of my impressions. So we start with Batman, and I love his suit. It's like blue with the yellow, utility belt. It looks like the old 60s show again. But the whole scene is all Art Deco, and I love Art Deco, and he's got like the squarest jaw you've ever seen.
Mm.
So, I mean, we're just kind of introduced to him. There's a new criminal, the Phantasm, and he's He's in charge of fog. He kills bad guys, but people think it's Batman because he wears a cape. I don't know. So I want to say I don't think it's intentional blackmailing, to be quite honest. I think that they're just it's just unfortunate.
Right.
That
when Phantasm reads the paper, is he like, oh,
why is he getting all my credit?
Yeah. I mean, is he glad because it's like, okay, they're blaming Batman for this? Or is he kind of like, oh, well, I accidentally built my suit so it looked just like Batman? That was nice.
I can't read the paper
because there's too much fog.
Someone wiped the paper off for me. No, I think he's probably thinking, what kind of world do we live in? When a bat gets all of my press, right? A man dresses a bat. That's probably what he's thinking. So anyway, this guy, he's killing the bad guys. And Batman, he's on the case. He can't really figure out who the Phantasm is. But very shortly into the movie, I'm like, oh, it's the father of the girl he used to love. Who, by the way, he thought was dead, but she's back now. So that's cool. And so that's what I thought pretty early on. It's his father. He's getting revenge from because his father was involved with all these bad people, like doing financial deals, and it wasn't going to turn out well.
They were extorting him.
They were extorting him. Now, we learned that this girl is really good at jiu-jitsu, and I just want to point out that jiu-jitsu practice almost always turns into doing it.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm assuming that happened, right?
I remember the first time John and I did jiu-jitsu.
It's getting really hot in here.
I need to take a community class on jiu-jitsu and just pair up with the girl in there.
Yeah, because seriously, I mean, at some point you're just going to say, I would feel much more comfortable doing this with my shirt off.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Hard?
Yeah. So, but we get deeper into this, and now that she's back, he realizes that he could put his life of crime fighting away because he has someone to live for. This is the girl that he loves. What's her name again? She's an important character.
Andrea,
right? And so if she is his original love in the comics. I looked it up. I'm like, who on earth is this Andrea girl? So she's his first Vicky Vale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Also, someone was using Banaka in this movie, and it was great. Someone is spraying Banaka in their mouth, and I made a note of that, and I can't remember who it was, but it was pretty great.
I think it was probably Arthur, the other person who liked Andrea.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think you're absolutely right. So now, why does the Joker come into this? Does Arthur go make a deal with the Joker? I can't remember.
No. The Joker comes in because this is way back when this league of criminals that were in bed with Andrea's father, the Joker was like their henchman. And so the Phantasm would have had to go after the Joker eventually, but also the criminals go to the Joker and they say, you're implicated in this too.
That's right.
This person is knocking us off. So we need you back on the case, Joker. And so Joker and Batman are pretty much going after this Phantasm guy.
Yeah. So the good news is it's Luke Skywalker, right? And people love Mark Hamill's Joker. He's yes. I think, after like he did a couple really crappy movies after Return of the Jedi, he kind of found his place doing the voiceover for the Joker, and that's how he continued his career.
It's so pretty cool. It's too bad Siskel and Ebert really.
Dude, Corvette Summer
performance. Yeah,
Corvette
Summer. What was the other terrible movie he was in? Was it The Guyver?
He was in The Guyver.
He was in Guyver. Okay. So what we also noticed from Batman is when Batman takes off his shirt, he has one giant pec muscle.
Yes.
It's the unibrow of pec muscles is what he's got going on, right?
Yeah.
So, nice. Yeah. Okay. So we basically come down to where Batman discovers who the Phantasm is. And I was wrong, but I realized I was wrong before the reveal. So like 30 seconds before, it's Andrea, of course. She's back wreaking revenge.
Bop.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then so the Phantasm, it ends up being like a fight with the Joker and the Batman, and he's trying to save Andrea. And it's like in this model town, and it's so awesome because I would love to have a fight in a model town.
Yeah, it's so great.
It feels like Tiny Town a little bit, so that'd be funny. But also the whole like Godzilla thing would be pretty cool. So anyway, I think if I remember correctly, at the end of this movie, we think that Andrea's dead, or does she actually die?
Andrea's fighting Joker, and they get separated like in the underground mini city area. But I think she like quotes takes care of Joker later. Like
okay, so there's no hint at the end that she might have survived.
I don't think there was. Didn't she survive? I thought she did. Oh gosh, this is always bad. Why do we always forget?
Because
how movies
I want this movie to be Batman's. What's the James Bond movie? Is it In Her Majesty's Secret Service?
Right.
Right.
Okay. Well, this is why it's great though. This is why it's even better than on Her Majesty's Secret Service, because you said it before. It's like this is the woman that Batman was willing to give up his Batman life for, yeah. But then it turns out that she's more far removed in the same way he is than he is. It's not, and so due to both of their choices, it's like Batman can't catch a break because. It's up to the agency of this other person, and this other person is even more of a Batman than he is, even more extreme, and so they can't be together for the same reason that he wouldn't be with her the first time.
So, like Batman and Catwoman, is it kind of the same?
Yeah, situation? It's a little bit.
Yeah, like what, like the very last thing you see is Andrea or whatever her name is. You see her on that. She's on a cruise ship, right?
Oh, good, she survived. So. All right. Would the movie have been better if the ultimate sacrifice had been made, if she had died? Would it have been better?
I like it better this way.
Okay,
I think for that reason, it's like oh, it could never be. And so it could never be.
Yeah.
Oh, and so it's not that it could never be because she's dead, but there's the choice because she's still alive, but it still will simply never be.
Right.
Because of their choices. Okay. So, all right. I see it. Okay. Now, the worst part about this film, though, is the end credit song is just the worst song ever written.
Did you look up who sang it?
I didn't, but I noticed that she rhymed question with indiscretion. So I mean, that's right up there with rhyme with that Party in the USA where so she good. Where she rhymes nodding my head like yeah, and then she rhymes yeah with yeah. So anyway, yeah, who sings it?
Tia Carrere.
Who's Tia Carrere? Is
Tia
that
Carrere
that model?
Stop it!
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You know her.
That's
from
fantastic.
Freaking
from Wayne's World.
Wayne's
yeah.
World and True Lies.
True Lies. Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember.
And Rising Sun.
And Rising Sun.
Well, you guys are. I'm glad movies. To see you guys are big Tia Carrere fans.
We started the fan club just now.
Early yeah, 90s.
I'm going to say something bad about her. I need to know that she didn't die today.
No, say something bad and then I'll tell you.
I never really liked Tia Carrere.
She died yesterday.
She died yesterday, huh? Well, that's
okay,
too bad.
I didn't like it. No, I never liked Tia Carrere because I remember seeing her on talk shows when she was on Wayne's World.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, yeah. So this is a big acting gig. She's like, yeah, I always wanted to be a singer. And I'm like, you wanted to be a singer, but you sucked in Wayne's World and you sucked at the end credits of Batman Fantastic.
Anyway, so I guess those are my thoughts on that. That's Mask of the Phantasm right there.
Yeah. So I love this movie. I don't know if you guys ever watched the Batman TAS, the animated series, but
a bit
for
of
me,
it, yeah.
That's why I love Mask of the Phantasm is because I still watch Batman TAS and I watch it with my son who I think we've sat down and we've watched the whole thing. I think all what four seasons we've watched, I don't know, two or three times. So I love Batman TAS. Like
so
Kevin Conroy, Hamill's the Joker. Like this is, the Art Deco, like everything is just so simple. And the way that they drew Batman, which I love, is it's not the white backgrounds. They do everything on black backgrounds. So it gives it that unique look. So I love everything about Batman TAS.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know how they it's kind of weird because I don't know enough about animation, but I was always under the impression that you need animation cells, which are like clear. Cause I did read that too, that they draw on black. But I don't know if you have to use clear cells. Well, I guess.
So the clear cells are like the overlay of like the characters and if you're changing some of the background, but the background itself in Batman is the cells are overlaid on a black background.
So that's fascinating because, you know, Bob Ross, he always started with a black canvas.
I wonder if he worked on TAS at all.
He did. He did. He painted everything in TAS.
That's interesting. A little bit of trivia. You'll only get that trivia here, folks.
Yeah. Don't bother verifying that one. It's good. That fact is solid. So
here's what I like about this movie. Well, okay, it's not necessarily what I like, but here's like one wish that I have. First of all, I wish that our femme fatale pick for next podcast movies, that was the one that was picked. I don't think that's the one that was picked, but this would have been a really great femme fatale.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
Mask of the Phantasm. It's a movie.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it was way better than one of the other movies we watched in this podcast.
I agree.
That's a darn good segue for the crap pile of trash heap that I'm about to get into. Are we ready?
Well, we're never ready, but we should start.
Oh my gosh.
Really quick, before you get into it, did this movie not start with it's the ambiguously gay duo song? Like,
dude. Oh my gosh, this movie. Well, not only that, but like, as I'm watching that, like the dressing up, like the suit, like what is going on? That is totally ambiguously gay duo.
Well, it has
show more of these buns.
They swivel around, they show their crotches, and then the camera zooms in on the crotches.
It does.
Someone decided to make that choice. It's not just this weird accidental crotch kind of situation.
Intentional crotch is a lot worse than accidental crotch.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we jump into this, have you guys gone onto YouTube and watched the apology by Joel Schumacher for this movie?
Oh, I didn't know it was on YouTube. I read that he did an apology, but I didn't know it was on YouTube.
Yeah. Like, I watched a bunch of YouTube stuff today, and it was funny to see, like, kind of like George Clooney makes fun of it, kind of like Ryan Reynolds made fun of what's it called in Deadpool when he's like, you're Green Lantern, you're not gonna. He's like, as long as the suit's not green and animated, like something like that. So this movie is just the worst. And I remember the buildup for it. I was totally stoked because I was a Schwarzenegger fan, and I'm just like, yes, they paid him $20 million at the time, which was the most ever paid. I think until Robert Downey Jr. got paid out on Iron Man, if I remember correctly. Because, you know, Robert Downey Jr. made like $70 million for Iron Man. Or something ridiculous because his deal was back end. So up until that point, Arnold held the record for the most money being paid to an actor.
Well, kind of funny watching it now, like, because I heard that was a big deal. Like, he got paid $20 million and he was like in 20 minutes of the movie. But at the same time, apart from, I guess, maybe George Clooney, I still think I'm surprised that Arnold Schwarzenegger was still as much a central figure. Because I kind of thought he would only be in for a couple minutes, like almost like a cameo kind of situation. But it seems like he's giving it the most.
Yes.
Like, in a way, I wouldn't say he earned $20 million, but he at least clocked in for work for sure.
So the budget on this movie was somehow $125 million. Made $238 million. So Batman and Robin. I guess I still don't know what this movie's about.
Yeah,
like,
I know,
it went in so many. It went in so many different directions. It was kind of a mess from the beginning. I guess what I was kind of struggling with today is just how much detail do we go in about the plot? Like, I think it's more fun to kind of talk about just how absolutely terrible it is and how terrible the set pieces were. I guess there's like immediately kind of attention placed on Batman and Robin's. It feels like there's strain in the relationship kind of from the beginning, right? Like, Robin isn't willing to accept the fact that he is a sidekick. Right. Just from kind of the beginning, it kind of starts like that, which kind of caught me off guard. I guess I wasn't expecting that. Kind of weird. But so essentially, like you said, John, the plot really kind of focuses, for me, it was kind of a surprise around Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, the getting of his wife, like, you know, his wife, we come to find out, is kind of frozen. She's in, I don't know, like, she's not cryogenically frozen, but she's kind of suspended in cold air. Oh, so terrible.
That was the best one. That was, why didn't that make
sense? I guess I was surprised by how these kind of weird characters were kind of the stars of the movie. Like, Bane was in it a lot more than I was expecting. And so we see Poison Ivy, Uma Thurman, and what's the guy's name? Is it John Clark, that weird scientist that played he was in Smallville?
He plays
Luthor's dad. Yeah, Uma Thurman is like some botanist, I guess, or some sort of I would say some botanist, and she's kind of creating this like, she's kind of worked together with like some serum or whatever, and she's in the same lab as this scientist who's then injecting this, he calls it the super soldier serum, into this skinny guy who then becomes Bane, and he becomes this big monster, and the, you know, Poison Ivy whole time. I don't know what her connection is with this scientist. That never made any sense, but her,
like, they were leasing the same space or something. It's like,
it was,
they have the same building. It's like, oh, they're paying like a dual rent, but they're doing different things. Yeah.
So it's like her whole through line is the kind of environmentally conscious, anti-villain. Like, she, I don't know how to describe it. Like, you seem like her intentions are good, but then it's,
she's like beyond PETA. She goes, right?
Yeah, she goes into
like
it.
Plants like, have feelings too.
She's a psychotic environmentalist.
Yeah, she's a psychotic environmentalist. That's a good way to put it. So there's that whole like weird storyline. I don't know. And then with Batman and Robin, we, like I said, we start to kind of feel this tension, and then, oh my gosh, someone comes knocking on the door, and it's Alfred's niece, who he's been secretly supporting in England. And it's Alicia Silverstone, who makes no effort for a British accent. I mean, maybe it's a good thing, but that was kind of weird. So she gives this like backstory, and it's terrible. And obviously Robin is totally infatuated with her, and just immediately is like, oh yeah, okay, great. So, So the scientist or whatever ends up, like, at the beginning, he ends up like poisoning Poison Ivy with something, right? Doesn't he, like, gives her some, does he give her some of that super soldier serum? Like something, or is she choked out by Bane? Like, what does Bane choke her? I can't remember.
It's a combination of the serum and her plants swallow her up and then resurrect her.
Yeah, they rebirth her, like birth of Venus, sort of, I guess.
Yeah.
I watched this movie today. I just need you to know, I'm pretty focused when I watch movies. I watched this movie today, and I could not remember that. I don't know what the hell was going on. It was so
I remember that very well, because I remember thinking, okay, that's just like her big transformation. Like it's like a plant from Zerker's party supply, just like around her. It's just okay. It's not like, oh, this is just terrible. It's like you purposely chose to find the cheapest looking plant.
Oh,
I'll just say it right now. I think it's really obvious that what Joel Schumacher was trying to do was like, okay, Tim Burton removed it so far from the 66 Batman. I'm going to attempt to be as close to the 66 Batman as humanly possible in 1997.
Okay, so that's so. Oh, sometimes you say something, and I just love you for it. So, I was talking. No, you do it. You listen to Jahan. I totally did that wrong because I put the H before the L.
Someone spelled my name like that. It is restaurant. Yeah.
So that's perfectly summed up. So this movie feels like an unsuccessful parody of itself.
Sure. Yeah.
Like,
oh man. Every prop comes from the party store, right? Like, everything looks like the cheapest possible prop in the world.
You paid $125 million to what? Go kick some laser tag owner's ass and take all the stuff in their warehouse?
Isn't that what it looks like? Like every single set looks like, let's get some glow-in-the-dark paint. It looks like a really badly made haunted house at a really crappy amusement park.
It looks like they filmed on location and they said, okay, how much money do we need to make this into a set?
Yeah. No. So very good. So you know how like in Planet Nine from Outer Space, someone bumps one of the tombstones and it wobbles?
Oh, yeah.
Every prop in this movie wobbles.
Right. Oh, dude. So when she meets her demise, she's eaten by a Venus flytrap, and the whole thing is a foam mess that is like fold as it's folding is like bending and creasing. And it's just like, I don't understand. So, okay, so Uma takes her revenge when she gets resurrected. She kills a scientist. And then Bane becomes her honey and does her bidding.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. So Alicia Silverstone, and there's that, and it's terrible. And probably the titular moment of this movie happens at a charitable auction, right, where they're trying to raise money. And – you know, people are bidding on stuff, and there's all these weird gorilla costumes or these weird like plant monster costumes going on. And then there's like chicks that they're like, oh yeah, these gals, we're going to make them look attractive, and they look attractive. They're in nice dress. And there's weird, like, you know what it was? It was the inspiration for Aronofsky's Rock Monsters and Noah. These like weird creatures.
Yeah.
Like that were just terrible looking. And then, oh, Uma is there. And what does she have? A pheromone. Wah, wah.
Yep.
And she tricks all the guys and they start bidding. And the one guy's like, 500,000. And then they get the pheromones on them. And Batman's like, 1 million. And then Robin's like, 2 million. And then 3 million. And then 4 million. And then Batman's like, you don't have that kind of money, Robin. He's like, I'll just borrow it from you. 6 million. And Batman's like, 7 million. And then that's when you see the Batman card. Don't leave the cave without it. I honestly, like, that's when I lost it. I was laughing so hard. I couldn't control it. Like, I couldn't even believe that was a thing.
I just love that the genius that is Bruce Wayne, when he's under the influence of pheromones and he's trying to outbid his young ward, that he doesn't think to say, no, I won't lend you the money. Not for this case.
Right?
He's like, dang it, you got me.
I do have money. Yeah.
So then, you know, Freeze has this whole plan of he's trying to collect these diamonds for, I mean, there were so many like villains, like the Rogues Gallery in this movie was just like, there was so much going on. And Schwarzenegger was by far the best part of this movie. Besides the bat nips.
Pretty good, actually.
Not even close. He was by far the best part.
Yeah.
Okay, $20 million. Okay, for this, really. But he was engaged. He was overacting, which that's why you watch Arnie, is because this is the perfect role for him to just overact and be terrible. Like, okay, what's all the terrible one-liners you can think of? Because that's what Arnie was known for, was like these great one-liners. Mm-hmm. So that's what he did here. And he freaking nailed it. And so, you know, again, the thing with Victor Freeze is that he's trying to find a disease, or trying to find a cure to heal his wife. And so how he's going to do that, his master plan is to get these diamonds for his freeze gun, his freeze ray, whatever he calls it. And he's going to freeze all of Gotham and hold them hostage, get all the money. I'll hold them hostage for billions. And then he can finally get the cure for his wife. So the Mr. Freeze, for me, is a really important character because Mr. Freeze, the Mr. Freeze episode was the first episode of Batman TAS.
Oh.
Well, was a Mr. Freeze episode.
Hmm. I recently watched that one. It's really good.
It's really good. So anyway, what were you gonna say, Roy?
Well, it's just that it seems so flawed because he's got like this super legitimate research. He's really smart. And it just seems like science would have been interested in this. He probably could have gotten this funded without like murdering people with his gun. And by the way, his superpower is a gun.
Right. And also, I don't know, maybe if he gets the world's biggest diamond, maybe he could use the diamond to get the funding. Cut the middleman. Cut the freezing middleman. Yeah.
So, like, one of my favorite parts of this is, like, he's in this lair or whatever, and they're coming to arrest him, you know, and apprehend him. And he throws a cop up into the thing, and he catches his gun, his freeze gun. And someone threw this gun at Arnie, and he wasn't expecting it because it bounces, and then he, like, kind of – gets it. I lost it. I was laughing so damn hard. So then, like, Poison Ivy becomes attached to him, and, like, Mr. Freeze is this. He's this desired man because, you know, some of the other minion gals want him, like Vivica Fox, as she reprises her role of Vernita Green in Batman and Robin.
Yes.
So
that may have been my favorite part of the movie. Just because I liked I sort of weirdly liked the relationship stuff that Mr. Freeze could have anybody he wants, but he only wants his wife.
Yep.
She's frozen, so he wants to freeze everybody else. And then on the flip side, you get Poison Ivy, who she literally has the power of love. She could have anybody, but the one man who's immune to her, like, pheromone thing is the person that she obsesses over. And she's just like super crazy. Like, she does not need to do anything she needs to do. Yeah. She is just, like, a hysterical woman in this. And it's over this weird love kind of situation.
Well, yeah, what is Arnold, like, Mr. Freeze, your pheromones work on regular men, not those with the cold heart.
Yes.
So anyway.
My favorite, line of his, though, is when he just says, you know what's cold? Ice.
Okay, wait. Okay, now's a good time. Sorry, I gotta say this, you guys. I have it put up on my computer. The Mr. Freeze quote puns ranked from horrible to most horrible.
Oh, let's.
You ready?
Okay, let's do it.
Oh my gosh. Here's the thing, because okay, I'll read them all, and then I'll get to my big complaint at the end. Okay, number 13, winter has come at last. Number 12, the Iceman cometh. Number 11.
Okay, like the way he was holding his freeze gun, I was like, oh, that's inappropriate.
Oh yeah,
I didn't realize that actually.
That's not a porn reference.
Number 11, everything freezes. That's my favorite one.
Oh my god!
Number 10, tonight hell freezes over.
It's over. Oh my.
Number 9, I'm afraid that my condition has left me cold to your pleas of mercy. Number 8, pool party.
What did I say? Pool party?
Cool party.
Oh, cool party.
Oh my gosh. Cool party.
Number 7. Okay, here's a switch. Here's kind of a switch. You're not sending me to the cooler. See, because you get that? Because the cooler is prison. But usually, like, saying cold things is positive things. But in this case, the cooler is a negative thing for him.
Oh,
so I kinda like
gosh.
That one. Yeah.
It's so good.
Oh, here's a good one. Number 6. This is when he's shooting Robin. He shoots Robin and he frees him and he says, "Stay cool, bird boy."
Yeah, bird boy.
Number 5. All right, everyone, chill. Number 4.
So bad.
It's a cold town. Number 3. Tonight's forecast. A freeze is coming.
A freeze is coming.
It's like tonight's forecast. You could have, like. Oh, okay. Oh, I'll hold it for the end. Oh, gosh.
Tonight's
number
weather
2.
Forecast.
What killed the dinosaurs?
The ice age.
Ice age. Wait for response there. Okay. Number 1, and the best one, the one that's famous, let's kick some ice.
Yeah, I'm so glad that was your number 1.
Which is
let's
like,
kick
okay.
some ice.
Okay, it's that's the only. Okay, here's the thing. This is a list, and the list does it too much. Too many favors, because it's a list of, quote, puns. Let's kick some ice. That's the only pun.
That's
all the other ones are just him saying cool.
Yeah. So many of his lines are, like, just, like, he's just pointing things out, right? And it's not, like, clever or anything. So, like, where he says, what killed the dinosaurs? The ice age? Like, well, that is a historical fact.
Right. It just, that just
and
happened.
It just has no idea. What on earth is he talking about? What does that have to do with anything other than he's saying, this is something that was cold once? It was the ice age. It was once cold.
So
there's some other cool things. We'll talk about those too. I don't know.
There was a Jewish comedian who it came out in like 99 or 2000. I think I had said this before, but it was right after Batman and Robin. And he's like, I'm Jewish. So you know what the most horrifying thought would be? Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze in charge of the concentration camps. Can you imagine the one-liners? And I remember just like he did some example, like you're fired and like all of these things like that were so obvious. But that to me just – I was kept thinking back in that as I'm hearing these terrible one-liners.
Yeah.
And his makeup and his suit like, oh, yeah, what was it? Because she's like Poison Ivy's like, oh, did you get this in a 50? The trick is to go one size smaller. It makes you look slimmer. What? What?
Your so, armor is one size smaller?
Oh my gosh, it's so terrible. So, but anyway, Poison Ivy like really wants him, and so Mr. Freeze does all this stuff, and he like freezes the town, and I want to get to the most ridiculous thing. So, Batman and Robin have this like back and forth, right? And Robin's just like, I'm sick of it, and they go into this weird factory and he gets pushed into the green slime, and Robin gets up and huffs off like, I'm doing this alone, boo, I want a Robin signal instead of just a Batman single. So anyway, there's this friction that Poison Ivy has successfully created, and you know, Batman pleads with him, hey, be smart about it, and they're arguing, and it's weird because Batman is like, she's tricking us, this isn't right, you see what the friction is, ignoring the pheromone, like the pheromones that are supposed to be tricking. I don't know, that was fine. That was weird. So he implores Robin, hey, be smart about this. Oh, and so Poison Ivy lures Robin in for a kiss. This is great. Mm-hmm. Lures him in for a kiss. Kisses, and you see it, the look in her eyes, and she's expecting certain death. But wait, Robin says
rubber lips aren't
susceptible to your charms.
Oh, yeah.
So he pulls off the rubber lips.
What if she just kissed him again?
Yeah. I wish she had just like immediately kissed him again.
Yeah, just
like, he's like, and then he's like, dumbest. Oh, crap. Oh.
So anyway, like I said, Poison Ivy gets trapped in the Venus flytrap. That's terrible. So, Mr. Freeze, here's what we learned throughout the movie. With the freeze gun, if you get shot, you have 11 minutes to live. Mm-hmm. You have 11 minutes to thaw out. So what's it going to be, Batman? You going to save Bird Boy, or are you going to chase the villain? Boo! So he gets this last diamond, freezes the city, and the worst resolution in history, including Armageddon, we should do a drill on an asteroid. Shut up. The worst resolution in history is, oh, yeah, well, it's morning in Congo. Can we redirect satellites from super hacker Alicia Silverstone? What the? So they redirect the satellites to get the daylight to reflect around Earth and shine on Gotham because it's 5 hours till sunrise.
Yeah.
Boo. Dude, I heard that like plot. And it was uncontrollable laughter from that point on. Like, I don't know how much I heard, but it was so terrible. So anyway, they find a cure for Alfred, who's weirdly enough dying from the same disease, but stage one, that Victor's wife is dying from. Alfred's cured, and apparently a gentleman never talks about his sickness. I don't know. Okay, weird. So he was keeping it a secret from Bruce Wayne.
But it's Mr. Freeze that provides that cure.
So Batman appeals to his humanity.
Yeah.
Even though he's got a cold hot, appeals to humanity. He gives him the vials, cured, and then he says, "So here's the thing, Victor. We're going to move your wife to Arkham so you can keep doing research. Just so you know, Poison Ivy tried to kill her. She didn't do it successfully. I saved her. We've essentially kept her in the frozen state so that you can have a chance to do your work and save your wife and so forth."
And he cries a tear, which then
evaporates as ice or something.
Yeah,
because ice evaporates.
You got to get to my favorite part about Arkham, though.
They make him cellmates with Poison Ivy. Right?
Oh yeah, with Poison Ivy. That's right.
Okay. Which is really isn't that really dark? Because I think the assumption is, well, we're giving you an opportunity to go murder her, right?
Right.
Yeah.
There's no way, even considering the circumstances of this movie, if it's an insane asylum, you don't just mix males and females in the same insane asylum room, do you? I mean, it's not just like standard procedure.
So
you certainly don't in prison.
Another key point that I skipped over was how Alicia Silverstone came to know about Batman. It's because Alfred had prepared this huge monologue and all these computer files to his estranged brother who hadn't talked to forever about, okay, here's all the secrets. And then she like hacks it. And it's just like the stupidest scene. And then she finds out and then she gets a suit and that Alfred prepares for her. And she's a heroine and kind of saves the day. And
I love it. It's like a so
terrible.
Congratulations. You broke into the cave. So you get, here's your suit.
Seriously, this Alfred, this version of Alfred is dying to tell everyone he knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman. Like Bruce every Wayne's single Batman. Movie yes. that this yes. Alfred is in, it's like, I got something I got to tell you. And he tells everybody. So I got it. So there's a part about this movie that I like, and it's Alicia Silverstone because she is so darn.
What? All I heard was a fart sound.
She's like a little button. She's as cute as a button. Now, her bat outfit, her bat girl outfit is the most ridiculous thing in the entire world.
It comes with heels,
which makes a lot of sense. But let me tell you the worst part about this movie, because this movie is so bad, but by far the worst part of this movie
you guys heard about the fat girl controversy, right?
Yeah, she was supposed to be Poison Ivy, but she was too fat.
No. Alicia Silverstone, she got mercilessly just destroyed by I feel so bad about this because apparently she gained a little weight and she couldn't fit into the Batgirl costume. And so like all the entertainment press just demolished her, including, and it's like funny to read this now, like other like female reporters are like, she's so fat, you know, which is like
hashtag me too.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Kind of too bad. Sorry. That was
I think she's cute as can be. Anyway, false. Poison Ivy is the worst thing that ever happened to any superhero movie ever.
True.
And Uma Thurman is so terrible. She's bad. Like I get so angry watching her. So she decided, hey, you know what the best take on Poison Ivy would be? A plucky 1940s reporter. That's the accent I'm going to use throughout the entire film. And we don't know when she's being sexy until they play the saxophone, and then that helps. That really tips us off. So they bring in Sergio in the background. He plays the saxophone, so they're sure to know that she's trying to be sexy. But she is so bad.
See,
bad.
It could have worked if they made it more. I mean, because she isn't sexy. Weirdly,
no. Uma Thurman's not sexy.
I think she is. I think Uma Thurman is. I mean, she can be. Certainly, I mean, she's certainly sexier in like Kill Bill.
Peter Griffin, wasn't he her eye wrangler?
I know. Yeah, she does have the weird. But I think the idea, but it didn't work. I think the idea is that she's just a dork, an absolute dork. She could only be sexy with the pheromone. The pheromone.
So bad.
But it didn't really work. Bad. I think it kind of seemed like she was supposed to be sexy when I don't think that was the idea. But yeah, the My Girl Friday kind of accent, like it was halfway through. I'm like, oh, is she suddenly?
Man, aren't
like
you a bucket of firecrackers?
Yeah.
What the Poison Ivy, like, boo. So like Alicia Silverstone, I did notice. I was like, oh yeah, okay. She looked like she gained a little weight. But when it showed the bat thing where it's just like crotch, nipples, like it showed her getting ready.
Yeah,
I guarantee that butt. I guarantee that was Chris O'Donnell's butt. speaking of which, he still has his Robin suit. Boo! He was
what
like
do you
Conan
mean,
O'Brien.
Like, and oh he's wow! Like, okay.
I kept it. He's like, oh. I have it still, and it's just
I
like,
would.
Oh
I for sure would. Okay, here's another thing terrible. I don't get. Remember how? Because you said it's like Batman and Robin had the weird tension. They were like forcing themselves apart. And so part of Poison Ivy's big scheme is to find out where the bat signal is. And the final coup de grace isn't to destroy the bat signal or use it against some her final the final nail in the coffin is to switch it to the Robin signal instead of the bat signal.
Is that what they did?
You had
I didn't yeah. I was like why is Bane lifting it up? This doesn't make sense. I didn't even realize they were switching it to the Robin.
It was like they were doing something.
This
it's
movie
like
is terrible.
They aren't villains, they're minor pranksters in the city of Gotham.
The prankster. Oh my gosh. That reminds me of so Lego Batman is probably my top. It's in my top three of favorite Batman movies of all time.
Okay.
And they talk about like one of the funny things is the Joker's talking about calendar man, condiment man, the condiment king. Like he's naming all these terrible terrible villains, mm-hmm. and it's like. And he's like, no, seriously, Google them. Look them up. Like, they're real characters. I've read a couple of stories where these, like, they're real characters. That's what this movie felt like, is it's like, all right, we need, like, all the terrible characters, and we need to play them like they are the terrible characters. Like, that's what they got.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie, I have one more thing about Batman and Robin. Okay, here's another thing I like about Batman and Robin. I liked Elle Macpherson. I like how she is, and I think this is a meta commentary on George Clooney's dating life, because he used to date like a lot, but he would never settle down and get married. And so I think they were commenting on this. And so she plays his girlfriend of a year. And I like the fact that she's Batman's girlfriend, but she doesn't know that he's Batman, which is a nice change of pace. Because
Vicky Vale knows immediately.
Because Vicky Vale knows, like, what, before their second date, she knows he's Batman. And, JR, I don't know if you remember this, but when we saw Batman Forever, and, you know, we used to love Batman Forever. We had the Batman Forever poster in our college apartment and everything.
You're so old.
Nicole Kidman in Batman Forever was really great. And of course, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns, she was really great. So this was the third Batman movie that came out. And I remember we were watching it. And when Chase Meridian finds out that that Val Kilmer is Batman, I swear, JR, you yelled at the screen. You were like, oh, come on. Does he tell every girl he dates that he's Batman? which I thought was so funny. So it's like finally by this time he's like George Clooney's dating a girl for an entire year and she doesn't know that he's Batman. Kudos to her, or maybe I should say maybe she's the worst girlfriend ever because all the other girls know in like the first week.
Elle Macpherson, like she is so just like she like you look at her and you're like she reminds me of like Claire in House of Cards, like stately, like elegant.
Yeah. She's very.
I think she's so beautiful.
She was kind of like the late 80s, early 90s supermodel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, anyway,
we watched Batman and Robin.
That was, can we say, usually at the end of these,
I laugh my nuts off.
Well, that was a movie. Can we say that was a movie? Does this qualify? I don't know if it is a movie. I feel like it was just set B-roll.
Maybe. It was, I guess the other thing is like they spent $125 million in 97 to make this movie. And I'm watching this like, okay, yeah, they made a lot of sets, but it, like we talked about, it was so like distractingly bad.
Right. Like, but the thing is, it's not bad.
$100 million go?
It's not bad incompetent. It's trolling bad. It's pretty much what it seemed like to me. And I don't know, or maybe it just like it hit the mark because it was trying so hard to recapture some of the Batman fun, but it mostly captured the Batman anger.
Yeah, the Batman
anger. Oh, yeah. Well, so that's why I mean so in Batman Forever, right, which Michael Keaton was still supposed to play Batman in Batman Forever, but he left because at a table sitting, Joel Schumacher said, "Why can't Batman be more fun?"
Yeah,
and that was like Keaton's like
out.
I'm out of here. I'm gone, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Keaton is.
Siskel and Ebert gave it. They each gave it. I watched the Siskel and Ebert review about Batman and Robin. They each gave it two out of four stars.
Oh really?
Oh geez.
Oh, they said it was well produced but overproduced, and I was just like, oh yeah, this is totally a 90s review because it's not well produced at all. So I thought that was interesting to like hear the review from Siskel and Ebert, but yeah, let's do awards because this movie is Batman and Robin was terrible.
Yeah. probably going to be my favorite of the three, though. So we'll see.
Oh, I'll kill all of you.
Okay. Award,
you guys ready?
Award toe. Yep. Ready. JR, do you want to be in charge or do you want me to say all the awards?
Oh, I'm in charge. All
right.
There, buddy. So let's see. We're going to go with the best actor of all three movies.
Where did I write that down? I'm going with Keaton. I don't care.
Okay.
Mark Hamill, Joker.
Mark Ooh. Hamill. Okay, I'm going with Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Hmm.
Okay, who is our best guest star, or I guess you could say like movie star cameo or whatever, but go ahead.
I don't know. This is a weird one. It's always hard to pick a guest because like everybody's a guest, but
yeah,
the one I was kind of most excited to see was Jesse Ventura.
What did I miss? Well, where was Jesse Ventura?
He was one of the guards guarding in Arkham.
At Batman and Robin?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice. Okay.
Wait, what? No, he wasn't.
Wasn't it? Maybe it wasn't. Oh, no,
Jesse the Body?
Yeah, Jesse the Body Ventura. He was in Batman and Robin. He was one of the policemen.
Well, I'm looking it up, but okay, that's fine. We'll let it fly until I can disprove it. Go ahead.
I'm looking it up. You guys can keep talking.
What the? Okay. Oh my gosh.
Yep,
oh my gosh, you're right.
Yep.
Jesse Ventura, Arkham Asylum guard. Oh my! So I was gonna say Coolio, Robin as the weird drug dealer, or what was he like? Was he a? It says here he was a banker, but it just seemed like a drug deal.
Coolio's pretty good. I actually kind of like that because the camera's panning over and you're like, hey, is that Coolio?
Is that fucking Coolio? I like said that out loud and my buddy turns around. He's like, what? I'm like, dude, fucking Coolio's in this.
All right. So my pick, and maybe I'm cheating because this isn't much a cameo. I probably am. But I went with Billy Dee Williams in the minor role of Harvey Dent.
Yeah. It would have been fun. Yeah. It would have been fun to see him in Batman Forever.
Cool. 45.
Yeah. Especially since apparently like who would that was that guy's name? The play Tommy Lee Jones apparently hated being in that movie. And
oh my gosh, he was so terrible.
A large part of that was that he hated working with Jim Carrey. but just like you can tell that Nicholson loved it, you could tell that Tommy Lee
he was like gritting
his teeth. Yeah. He just seems like a miserable person. He just seems like a total dick, though.
Yeah. All right. How on earth did he get cast in that movie? Anyway, so your favorite technology.
Okay, this is a good one. Okay, sorry. I have two runners up, and they're both from Batman and Robin. Okay. First is the Flash Gordon rocket at the beginning that they surf out of.
Oh my goodness!
Sorry, you guys. Sorry, I brought up the surfing. How did that?
It hurt so bad.
Why I forgot about that. It was so terrible.
But they surfed out of a rocket that I swear is just the rocket from the 1980 Flash Gordon. I swear.
So terrible.
And then Mr. Freeze's little car that's just a Dalek. It's
what is that?
Dalek
from that's what I'm not.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Okay. No. But the best technology. The best technology is Joker's jetpack in Mask of the Phantasm. Because it's not like a Rocketeer jetpack. It's like an old school, like real life jetpack with the handles that come out front and you stand like vertically instead of like horizontally.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's like, it's the Chuck Yeager technology, you know, the old test pilot for the Air Force that did it. Like, no, I'm so glad you brought that up. That was so great. My favorite technology was the super freeze ray that required diamonds. and his suit. Like, that was so terrible. Okay.
Yeah, what is it about diamonds that helps make things colder? I don't understand.
Yeah, that's really weird. They're forever, like they would, like, refract and, like, maybe melt things, you know? That's usually what diamonds – that's what they're used for, and diamonds are forever. Remember, they have the melting satellite gun. Yeah.
Okay. So, I just went with Chemical X. I think that's pretty ingenious. You got this chemical that separate is fine, but you start combining it and it has fatal consequences.
It's the 24th chemical that was developed on Earth.
That's a good one.
Number X. Yeah.
Chemical X, yeah. All right, who's your favorite villain?
Or maybe it was the 10th chemical. Okay, my favorite villain was Joel Schumacher.
Well, that's pretty good.
That's great. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Oh, that's really it. Okay, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that's
okay.
It. I'm not elaborating. Director of Batman and Robin. But yeah,
that's so good. That was now.
He's so good.
I don't want to give.
Whatever.
I don't want to give my answer. My answer's gonna be stupid because all I went with Jack Nicholson. Yours was genius.
Oh no, you're fine, Zoe. Because some of these, it's fun to give like funny answers, but I think that we must give Jack Nicholson his due because Jack Nicholson's Joker is brilliant. So that's
maniacal and funny, and it's just everything perfect.
Sharp dresser. So we need to. I need to point out here that if you guys haven't already, you really need to go to YouTube and watch all 28 minutes of the Bat Thumb because that's fantastic,
dude. That's that terrible one that they do like. Is that? Do they like draw on?
They superimpose thumbs? Faces on thumbs. Yeah,
that's so terrible. No,
the bad thumb.
It's Roy's favorite
Wars
movie,
and I almost killed myself. It was so terrible.
I'm
Calvin insane. And I watched it.
Terrible. You got to see Bat Thumb. Robin's really good in it.
Anyway, Bat Thumb.
All right, your favorite hero.
My favorite hero is incredible monetary wealth.
Okay. All right, so, how about
that's
Zoe?
Really it. Oh, okay. So I'm still not sure how this works. That's a real answer. Okay.
That's a real answer.
Michael Keaton.
Okay. Well, mine is whoever ends up killing Poison Ivy is going to be the real hero.
Flytrap?
So quite possibly Mr. Freeze is the
Possibly Mr. Freeze. So what's the deal with the Venus flytrap? Does it just kind of chew her up and make her softer? Because it doesn't kill her.
I know.
It just kind of gums her a little bit.
It gums her. It's just weird.
It just chafes her, and so then she then can't move, right?
Like, what does it normally do?
I don't know.
Does it normally just kind of like, oh, I wasn't going to eat you. I was just going to chew you.
No, I'm just gumming you. Like, okay.
I was just going to cut you a little bit. So let's see. All right. Who's your favorite? What's your favorite death?
Oh, boy. Okay.
And this is a good serious answer for this one.
Okay. My favorite death is in Batman 89. One of the guys holding one of Joker's balloons who just keeps holding on. And then Batman steals the balloon and the guy can't hold on anymore and falls off.
Okay.
He's like flying. Vicky Vale cuts, or was it Knox or Vicky? One of them like takes an axe and starts cutting all the ropes that are holding the balloons. And one just, I mean, I really appreciate this goon because he's just like dedicated to making sure the balloon stays where it is so that he can kill a bunch of people. But he just held on too long, man. Fell to his death.
Yeah. What about you, Zoe?
Mine is I can't remember, it's Batman 89. It's the guy that Joker.
Shock buzzer. Yeah, I
almost forgot that guy. It's not the mayor. Who is that?
I think
guy?
It's one of the crime bosses.
Oh, it's one of the crime bosses.
Yeah.
Yep. That's my favorite death. Like
that is really great because
it's
like
a smoking skeleton.
Like, how did Joker not melt too?
So my favorite death, and this is maybe the most Tim Burton image from the whole film, right? Is the Joker
in
1989? No, so the Joker, right, where he's on the ground and you can see his face is kind of flattened because his skull is crushed, right? And he's got like all and he's got the big old grin and you hear the maniacal laughing and they pull like the bag of laughs out of his jacket, right?
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's fantastic.
That's so excellent. Yeah, that's a great. Good one.
Anyway, so let's see. How about your favorite name from any of these movies?
Okay, my favorite name. Okay, honorable mention, Bob the Goon. But definitely, okay, and I have two. I have a real person name and a person in the movies. The character name is Salvatore Valestra.
Okay.
But then my other favorite name is Jeep Swenson, who is the actor who played Bane.
Bane, oh my gosh. Yeah. I went down the Google rabbit hole with Jeep Swenson.
He died like shortly after Batman and Robin came out.
Yeah, it was right after.
And we're killing a lot of people.
A lot of people dying in this podcast. We should really. Yeah.
No, that's funny you mentioned Bob the Goon. That was my favorite name. I love that.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah.
So my favorite name is Buzz Bronski from Mask of the Phantasm.
Ooh, yeah, I almost picked
Buzz
Bronski.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if we're continuing this category, but here it is. It's your favorite food. And I have a pick that I can't understand. It made sense when I made it. I put Bianca from Mask of the Phantasm.
Banaka.
Oh, Banaka. It just auto-corrects. Yeah, Banaka. Banaka for sure. There you
I go. Like Bianca myself.
Yeah, I did too.
No, I went with soup on the long table on Batman and Vicky's awkward date.
Okay. Slurpee soup.
Yeah.
Okay.
They said it was good soup.
Yeah.
Need more salt. That's true. Do you have food?
Nah, I did not have a food.
Okay.
All right. Okay, your favorite Gotham.
Okay.
Ah, terrible.
My favorite Gotham. I'm going to go Gotham 89. I just think it's just a cool, weird, just city. It's like Metropolis, kind of, but like you don't know what decade it is. And obviously, you know, the animated series is very similar, but I really like, I just like the context of it all. You know, it's like the end of the 80s, and suddenly it's like, it almost like ushered in the 90s. Like, this is how things are going to look now, you know?
Yeah. Okay, very good.
I love the 89 Gotham, but I think my favorite is Mask of the Phantasm. I love that TAS. I love the TAS Gotham.
So I prefer the Tim Burton Gotham. All right, your favorite outfit.
Favorite outfit. Now, this is not favorite bat suit. This is favorite outfit.
Yes, not favorite bat suit.
Okay. My favorite outfit is, okay, so Vicky Vale, she's new in town, right? And she has to go to this benefit concert. And she goes home and she opens up like her clothes. And unfortunately, she does not have a benefit gown, but she does have a prom dress. And that's what
oh my
she
God.
Wore to the benefit. So that's my favorite outfit.
Okay. What about you, Zoe?
Jack Nicholson's outfit in the as the Joker.
The purple outfit. Okay.
After I love that purple with the green shirt and every. I love that.
Now, I didn't realize this, but I think the thought occurs to me. Was that the suit he wore when he fell in the vat? And did the vat turn that suit purple?
Well, so it's fascinating because he's at the place where he got the surgery, and the jacket he is wearing after the surgery is purple.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
So the chemicals probably changed him and his jacket.
That or he's oh man, I have to go get massive plastic surgery. I'm definitely going to need a purple jacket.
So when he falls into the vat, isn't he just wearing like a pea coat?
I thought it was like a trench coat. I don't know because
like at the beginning of the movie when he sees Jack Palance when he shoots him.
Has a pea coat and he has a suit. He's wearing that over his suit, so he probably has a purple pea coat that we never get to see because it's like by that time it's like into June and it's warmer.
He is super layered up.
Yeah. He does at the beginning of the movie when we see him, Napier's getting kind of rimmed. He is wearing a purple suit.
Okay.
Right.
So my favorite outfit is the Uncle Bingo mime tuxedo.
Oh, yeah. Genius.
He calls himself Uncle Bingo.
Oh, so great.
I don't remember that. Was that in
the press conference?
At the press conference in the 1989 Batman.
Oh, his like mime costume kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that was a great scene.
I love it. Roy's like, yeah, Bingo, the mime costume. Oh, no, I don't understand what that is. Oh, but no, the mime costume. Now I know what
the mime
costume is.
Yeah,
I didn't hear that.
Oh, he said, what is it? I can't remember the guy's name who he kills, but he says, hi, Billy. It's your Uncle Bingo. So, yeah. Great. Yeah, okay, so the best title. What's the best title from these three films?
From these three films, I'm going to go with Batman : Mask of the Phantasm.
Okay, Batman : Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, well, I'm going with Batman, so there.
Just Batman. All right.
Okay, I have Best Alien. Is there any reason to keep this category?
I have an alien.
I went with Luke Skywalker.
Luke Skywalker is the voice of... someone from another galaxy is the voice of one of the villains. That's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I went with the Python plants, because those are aliens. Those are like new species, so I call those aliens.
Okay, well, there you go.
Plants mixed with pythons.
All right. What about you, Zoe?
I don't know. Is Buzz Bronski considered an alien because
he went to space? Buzz. Yeah,
that's true.
Buzz, if that is your real name.
All right. What's your favorite quote, which is not the same thing as your favorite Mr. Freeze one-liner?
Dang it.
Oh, shoot. That is different. Okay. I do have a quote. It's actually from Batman and Robin. I actually like this.
Okay.
It's when Batman and Robin are ogling Poison Ivy, and they're like, I'm totally over her. But she had some great stems and some great buds.
Buds, yeah.
Which actually kind of works. It's like, because it's like stems and buds. They're both plants and both double entendres. So, so it's kind of the double your money there.
There you go. You got a good one, Zoe?
Where does he get all these wonderful toys?
Yeah, it's a great line.
Valid so question.
I know. So I have an honorable mention, and it comes from Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. And the quote is, "Bruce, it's me, Barbara," because apparently there's no way they could have told it was her.
Oh, that was so bad.
Until she revealed it, right?
Yes.
I know that you can't tell it's me because like, the outsides of my eyes are covered in black, but it is me, Barbara. So,
say one more line?
Sure.
Okay, sorry. I just love this line so much. Because I wrote down two more lines. So do I have to use those instead? Because I don't have a Mr. Freeze line. I have these two lines, so I have to mention them both. They're both from Batman 89, and I love them. The first is when Bruce Wayne walks into Vicki Vale's apartment, and he goes, "Oh, nice place you got here. Lots of space." You know, and they talk for a bit, blah, 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 blah. And then Joker invades, and Bruce Wayne goes and hides, and Joker says, "Nice place you got here. Lots of space." I just love that the two men in her life like just say the exact same line when they go into her apartment.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's I had never caught that.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. And then, okay, here's my favorite, though. And it's, remember, Eckhart, the corrupt cop from the first 89. He's on Joker's payroll. And but they have to – not Joker's payroll. He's on Jack Palance's payroll. And so Jack Palance hires him to rub out Jack Napier, kill Joker pretty much. And so Eckhart takes his group of corrupt cops, and these are his instructions. He says, "Shoot to kill."
Shoot to kill.
You know what I mean. Which I'm like, how else are we going to take that?
That's so great.
All right. So my favorite quote, though, it's not clever, but it's just Michael Keaton's "I'm Batman." So that's the quote.
Yeah.
All right, your favorite Mr. Freeze one-liner, and I'm going to start because it's just "What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age." And I think it's a really effective line because as soon as he says it, Batman and Robin are like, "What?" And they're just like stunned into inaction because like, what is he trying to say? What is that? What is he talking about? What does that mean? Because it doesn't mean anything. He just says it because it references cold. Anyway.
Well, he was in a museum when he said it.
Okay, whatever.
Okay, my favorite line is "Tonight's forecast."
Yeah.
"A freeze is coming," which is like, it's not just, okay, because so many levels. It's like, first, it's like "Tonight's forecast," and he sets up this level of suspense, right? Like, what's he going to say? Is it going to be clever? I don't know. But then he says, "A freeze," and not just a freeze, but "a freeze is coming," which is just continuing to hammer the point home that it's a forecast. Like, it's completely redundant from the phrase "forecast." So I just I just love it because it's
and he's
so wrong.
He's already there, right? Isn't he?
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, he's already there. He should say "a freeze is here," but then that would defeat the point of saying it's a forecast. It's like, okay, yeah, we know you're already there. It's like, so what you're saying is you're going to leave and come back?
I got a question for you, Mr. Freeze. I'm not trying to be rude here, but has there ever been a weatherman in any sort of era ever who's ever said that there's a freeze coming?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Yes. So my this is my favorite line, and it's the "Allow me to break the ice. My name is Freeze. Learn it well." For it, this is the best part.
Suffer the limitations of your children.
Right. Force the chilling sound of your doom. I wish you would have thrown a Conan quote in.
Oh, gosh.
All right. You guys ready? The next.
Oh, my gosh.
The next award is the best person who finds out Batman is Bruce Wayne.
Okay. I had to go with Barbara because at least she earned it. The other times it's just like Alfred just kind of ushering them in. It's like, okay, and here's the tour of the Batcave now.
You guys have been dating for 2 weeks. It's time.
Yeah.
All right. What about you, Zo?
Oh, dude. Oh, my gosh. The way that Alicia Silverstone uncovers it is so brilliant. Password is Peg.
That is not a strong password.
Not a strong password.
It's like your computer saying that is the weakest password. Like, seriously, someone can. That's a password that you could, like, type random letters and guess.
Like that,
it's three letters long.
No, because Peg is the name that he called her because she was his sister. Boo. I'm sorry. That was so terrible, but awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with the Joker from 1989 Batman because they're up in the Belfry and Batman springs the line on him, right? You ever dance with the devil through the with the pale moonlight? And it's a moment of stress, right? But the Joker puts it together real fast, right? I mean, he initially says, "What are you talking about?" And but then he gets it, right? And so, there you go. I thought
does
that was
Joker get it? Yep. I didn't realize does
because he says, "Hey, I killed your kids. You dropped me. You dropped me in a." Or what was he saying? I was like, "I made you. You made me." You know, how silly is this?
Let me guess. Plant girl, vine lady, huh? I'm over the diamond garden gal. I'll turn you into mulch. Well, boo!
The Joker gets it because he knows he said that quote to Bruce Wayne, and now Batman is saying it back to him.
Yeah. Well, it's just that, like, if I were the Joker, I'd be like, okay, just a little bit more information because I say that every time I kill somebody, and I've killed a lot of people.
That's true. But and then shortly thereafter, the Joker, because he has these things on hand, he throws on a pair of glasses. Says you wouldn't hit a guy with glasses, and then Bruce Wayne hits him right in the face. Anyway, yeah. Okay, what's your favorite bat tool?
Okay, definitely. Okay, because you know he's into grapples. Right.
Yeah, he does like grapples.
But the one grapple that like starts shooting forward, but then he hits a button, and then the two grapples shoot to the side.
Oh yeah, what the?
And it's like it's just a thing of because he could have shot Joker in the face, but unfortunately he pulls out the grapple that just shoots everywhere but the face. But it's a grapple that like shoots one way, one shoots the other, and then it converts it into a zip line. That's definitely the best.
Slowly get away zip line grapple, right?
where the goons, I love the POV of him like going, and the goons are just kind of lightly jumping up to grab him. Like, oh,
man, that was so terrible.
It's not me. It's not me.
Yeah. So okay. What about you, though?
Dude, the grapples in Batman and Robin were like they'd go through the vent sideways and then they'd flip horizontal and catch. So, but they were like so chunky and just terrible. But I think the Bat MasterCard, I don't think there's a question. It's much like the shark repellent. I mean, the Bat MasterCard, it's such a dumb idea.
Oh, man.
I can't even handle it.
So I feel like
Batman has a line of credit. So do they verify your social security number, Batman? Like, how did you get this card?
Yeah.
Anyway. I feel like we need to do another Batman podcast so that we can see the 60s version and Batman Returns and one of the Christopher Nolans. But anyway,
I'm in.
Yeah. So my favorite bat tool is the Parade Balloon Retriever, because I feel like every task has a tool, right? And this thing that's connected to the front of the bat wing has no other purpose than to capture steel cables, right?
Yeah.
That's all it's there for. and it works perfectly.
And so, to sever the steel cables. It's like he has two settings. It's like capture the cables and then sever the cables.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he's up there and he's like, oh my gosh, thank heavens I thought to put that on the bat wing because this is just a moment for it. Okay, so what's your favorite bat suit?
Okay, well, the Keaton bat suit, 89. Yeah, okay. It's the toughest. It's just so tough looking.
Yeah. Okay. What about you, Zo?
I was Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. Again, it's I love how the lines of the Batman in TAS. So that for me is my favorite.
Okay, I agree with Zo. All right, now we're down to it. Who is the best Bruce Wayne?
You know what? I'm ah, shoot. Yeah, I'm going with Keaton. I did put Clooney because I'm just like, it is Clooney, right? Bruce Wayne is George Clooney. But it's Keaton. It's Keaton.
It is okay. Keaton.
It is Keaton. So who's the best Batman?
Also Keaton.
Also Keaton. It's okay, Kevin Conroy lover.
I like Batman 89 is one of my favorite movies of all time. As you saw, I don't know. I've been thinking about this all day. I don't know. I'm going to say Keaton. I don't know. I'm going to say Keaton. No, in all honesty, Kevin Conroy is my favorite Batman because there's so much material that I've been able to watch him in. Like he's voicing some of these new things and, you know, playing some of the Arkham games. Like Kevin Conroy to me is just that's Batman. Okay. So I'm going to say Kevin Conroy. Dang it. Saying that though.
It's okay. It's okay. Hey, now it's time for the two most important awards. Who's the gratuitous stud budget recipient? And I went with Batman's chin for Mask of the Phantasm.
Oh, really? Okay. I just went with Clooney.
Okay.
I don't like Clooney's chin, right? Like he's just he looks so good in the Batman suit, but he's so terrible at it.
Yeah, and it's not a great bat suit. But anyway, yeah.
Okay. The nipples of the crotch, like what like, the hell?
The whole, like, it looks like he's supposed to be wearing, like, a thong over the bat suit, like, yes. The way the color works. It's, anyway. Okay, so who is our hot chick budget? Who was the money spent on to get a gratuitously hot chick into one of these movies?
Okay, I have two honorable mentions.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Seven choices. It's okay.
Yeah. Andrea Beaumont.
Yep.
Is definitely one. And then I also have Dana Delaney, who was the voice of Andrea Beaumont.
Nice.
But I actually went with Jerry Hall from the first movie, who plays.
Oh yeah, he plays the
Alicia is her name.
Yeah, the Joker's
girlfriend. Joker's girlfriend and wife of Mick Jagger for a long while. Yeah.
Okay. What say you?
I mean, Andrea Beaumont, right? Like, she was so great in that. And it's fun to see, like you said, I think, John, the biggest thing about after everything's said and done, the realization that their love can't be is just makes me just love that character so much. Mm-hmm. So I would go with Andrea Beaumont.
Okay. So I with this award, I'm trying to stick to the spirit of the award, which I think is like someone who's in the movie gratuitously because they're just really good looking, right? So my pick then is Ella McPherson.
That's the right pick. That's the right one.
I almost picked the girl in the tube.
The girl in the
tube. She's terrible looking. Oh, gosh. Well, when I first saw her, I was like, that's not Ella McPherson. Who is this? You see Ella and you're like, Now your answer was right.
Because I thought it was. Right. I thought the girl in the tube was Elle McPherson. I'm like, is that Elle McPherson? But then she shows up as a different character, and I'm like, yeah.
All right, it's time to rank these bad boys. So who starts?
No. Wait, hang on. There are still two categories that you forgot.
I didn't. British. Okay, go ahead.
Best Robin.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Okay, I should learn to take these seriously every time you say one of these things, I guess. Geez, best Robin. We don't even have a choice. There's not a choice.
Right? By default, it's Chris O'Donnell.
I don't have a word that
was suggested in our group chat. And then, of course, the one that we usually do, which is best recurring character. And I picked Batman.
You're so stupid. Okay, I see.
All right. I have to help Jen with the kids, but let me give my rankings.
Okay.
Batman, Robin, Mask of the Phantasm, Batman 89.
All right, well done. Are you going to be back to pick a movie in a category?
Oh, we doing that now on this show?
Yes, yeah. on the show.
Oh, gosh. No, I'm going to stay on because that's important. I want to do it.
Okay, really quick, we'll do rankings then. I'll just say mine. I'm going to go Batman and Robin because – actually, you know what? No. Number three.
John.
No. Hear me out. Number seven is Batman and Robin, which is amazing, and I give it credit for coming in seventh in a three-man race. So.
Okay.
And then number two, I'm going Batman 89. Even though it is probably, you know, one of the best movies ever, just for the purposes of this podcast, I got the most thrill out of watching Mask of the Phantasm this time because I've only seen it twice. I've seen the original Batman a bunch of times, and it's great. But Batman Mask of the Phantasm just gave me the most pleasure this time.
Okay. So I'm going Batman and Robin, Mask of the Phantasm, then Batman, just like Zoe. So
Good. You're right.
I like Mask of the Phantasm. I'm not sure I completely understand why everyone thinks it's the greatest thing ever. But it was very good. So there's our ranking. So Zoe has a super pregnant wife that needs his attention, so we're going to try and do this quickly.
Yeah, let's hurry.
All right, hey, checking the polls right now. The next movie category we're watching is Reluctant Heroes. And our fans have chosen a movie that may not exist, but it's Rocky V.
Yeah, that's
as soon as you said may not exist, I'm like, oh, yeah, that doesn't exist for any Rocky fan. Honestly, it goes from Rocky IV to Rocky VI. I don't know.
I'm not sure if I've ever seen it all the way through. Maybe I haven't.
It's kind of so like a good.
Yeah. Okay. So it's another Batman and Robin. Seriously.
It is. Anyway, so you're right. This is trolling hour.
Yeah.
This is so trolly. Okay.
So my pick is my favorite. Not well, I don't know my favorite, but we're watching this Reluctant Hero. We're gonna watch Jimmy Chitwood from the movie Hoosiers.
Okay. Oh,
okay. That's a good pick.
Very good pick. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the star basketball player that refuses to play until. About two-thirds of the way through the movie.
That is a good pick.
Yeah. All right, Zoe, who's your reluctant hero? What's your reluctant hero movie?
My reluctant hero movie is one of my all-time favorites. It is Frank McLeod in Key Largo.
Key Largo.
Very, very good.
Interesting. Cool.
So yeah, a movie that Roy and I both love.
Oh, boy. Man, I'm excited.
I am, too. I just any excuse I can get to watch Key Largo, I'm in.
Oh boy, that's awesome! Woo, woo, woo. Okay,
Hoosiers. I haven't seen Hoosiers forever.
There you go. Our next categories we got to pick. So, Zoe, you want to pick one?
No.
Okay, I can pick.
I'll let Madrid pick this time because I was not prepared to pick a category. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. I pick. Oh, where is the sheet? Sorry.
My category is the Chinese standoff. So we are going to, if I have my way, we are watching three movies from three different Kung Fu movie masters.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Here's what you don't know about me is I have a pretty awesome Kung Fu collection.
Ooh.
I love Kung Fu movies.
Oh yeah. All right, John, what you got?
All right. This is my pick. And the category is called And He Can Act, which is star comes from another career field to be in something. And your examples are Glitter, Space Jam with Michael Jordan, Hard Day's Night with the Beatles, of course. Yeah, and I have a few ideas of which one I would pick if that was the case. So non-actor, okay. Pretty much.
All right, you ready for a sweet random pick?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Stop.
Number 16, and we are okay. Great movies that bombed at the box office. That's
very good. That's a good one. So right. Joe versus the Volcano, It's a Wonderful Life, or Austin Powers. Austin Powers was a bomb. I didn't know that.
It was a box office bomb. Yes.
Okay.
Was it really?
It was.
I love that category because The Thing, which we just talked about, and Blade Runner. Ooh, Blade Runner.
Or we could watch The Thing again. Okay. You get out of here. Get out of here. We'll wrap things up.
Thanks, you guys.
Okay. So I don't know. What else is there to say? That was intense. You know, usually we drag that out a little bit longer. So. Okay. Well, I'm just, you know what? I'm glad, just really quick, just a few thoughts right now. I'm glad we watched Batman and Robin because it was a lot of fun to talk about.
It was. It was really bad, but it was fun to talk about.
So take that, Facebook people that made
it. yeah. Jeez. It was painful to watch, but it was a lot of fun to talk about. Okay. So, hey, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time or maybe the second time, then congratulations. We're going to do some more, and it's going to be a good time. Yes. So what we need to tell you is that if you have some comments about the movies we're watching – that you'd like to send in. We have an email address. It is mine. Let's see. I need to look it up.
We didn't say yours, mine, theirs at the beginning of this podcast, did we?
Yes, we did.
Did we say this is yours, mine, and theirs? This is a podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did we? Okay.
Yours, mine, theirs podcast at gmail.com.
Yeah.
Yep.
I could have said that. I remembered without looking.
Oh, thank you, John. Yeah. So eventually we're going to have done enough of these that when you go to iTunes, you're not going to see all the podcasts we've done. But we have a wonderful blog. John, where's our blog at?
The blog is yours, mine, theirs podcast at blogs dot blogspot. Sorry, don't say at.
No, okay. It wasn't me.
You know what? Yours, mine, theirs podcast dot blogspot.com. Is that right? That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can download our entire collection of one other podcast there.
It's pretty awesome. Now, what's really important is if you're listening to us on iTunes and you realize that this is the best podcast you've ever listened to, is you need to give us a review, a 5-star review. Now, if you listen to this podcast and said, that was just garbage, that's fine. Give us a 5-star review and then say whatever you want.
You're still able to exercise your free speech after giving 5 stars. Yeah.
Yeah, by all means. But seriously, don't be a jerk. Give us the 5 stars.
Yeah. I mean, you'll get your money's worth if you give us the full 5 stars. It costs just as much money for you to rate 5 stars as 1 star. So you may as well, spread that wealth around. So be a big shot. Go ahead. I dare you to be a big shot and give us 5 stars.
Yeah. Hey, so as far as the emails go, what we'll try to do in the future is when we know what the next movies are we're going to watch, we'll send out an email to whoever is in our email chain, and we will we'll say, hey, these are the movies we're watching, and then, of course, watch them, and then send in your comments, and we will air your comments on our podcast, which will make you very popular amongst your friends and family.
Yeah, we'll do that. Oh, and one more little bit of socials. What is it? On Facebook, you probably found us before, but we are facebook.com/groups/yoursmineandtheirs is what it's called on Facebook. Yours, mine, and theirs. Because that's how Facebook interpreted it. by the way, I meant to say this last time. If you're not in our Facebook group and you're not witnessing Roy's little live commentary of the movies he watches, that is just the most exciting part of my life. Is watching Roy's comments as they're happening. When he's watching these movies that we're talking about now, it's a lot of fun. So definitely. Oh, and hey, we didn't talk about how Phantasm should have been called Fogtasm. I was so excited to say that. Why didn't we call him Fogtasm instead of Phantasm? Mask of
the Fogtasm. Yeah.
Oh, crap. Okay. Can we, it's only 8:30 where I am. Do you want to just start over?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, dang it. Okay. I could tell that you weren't serious.
Yeah, it's possible.
All right. Okay. Well, I don't know if there's anything else.
There isn't. John, of course, it's always been a pleasure. And I'm going to get on these next three movies immediately. Rocky V, Hoosiers, and Key Largo.
Rocky V, Hoosiers, Key Largo. You know, by the way, there's a chance. I'm pretty sure I've seen Rocky V, but maybe not the whole thing. I think the same case with Hoosiers. I'm not sure if I've seen it all in one sitting.
Oh, wow.
And I don't think exciting. I've seen Key Largo, so I think all three of these are pretty new to me.
And you were just saying you wanted to do podcasts that included movies we hadn't seen before. There you go.
I did say that. So, again, thanks, Facebook trolls, for making me watch Rocky V. I'm glad, because I haven't technically seen it, sort of. So, joke's on you.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, awesome. Well, okay, John, it's been a pleasure.
It's still been a pleasure, Roy. We'll see you next time.
No, the next category is twist endings, right? Okay, and but who's going to pick a movie next time? You're going to pick a movie from twist endings. That's the category. Oh, we didn't even announce that. Twist endings won.
Do you want to? Okay, yeah. That's the outtake right there.
Okay.